musical people can I do?
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. It's our last session at Letton Hall. I'm a little bit sad to be going home. I'm very excited about going to my bed at home, but I'm a little bit sad. Is anyone a little bit sad to be going home? Yeah. Our final session together. Is that me standing on here? Or is it just the microphone? Oh, let's swap microphones. Shall we have a final try? It's been so amazing to share with you this week just how much God is on your side and fighting for you and willing for your life to be as amazing as possible. And I really hope this week we can take away with us a fresh perspective of God, that he is always good and he can't be anything else but good. And that no matter what we've done, the same is true for you today as was right back in session one when we looked at the Israelites, that he will never stop doing good to us. But this knowledge of God being so completely and utterly ruthlessly on our side loses a little bit of its oomph if we only ever think about it in a me kind of way. If it gets stuck in our head as knowledge. Ultimately, if we see God differently, if our perspective begins to change, then our lives can't be the same again. And if we've come to realise this week how passionate he is for us, how much he's got our back, then that's got to affect our lives. And I want to say tonight that knowing God is on your side means you can live out a different, full of faith, adventurous life with God when you dare to put into practice God being on your side. Because it's when we start to live it that it starts to change us and it starts to change the people around us. Today I want to share with you a few stories of people who were courageous enough to do that, and we can see some examples from everyday life and the Bible, and hopefully it will click with us about how we can put God's onsideness into practice. Cast your mind back to when you first started secondary school. You might remember when you started school in year 7, and it's a bit, for some people, a bit of a new and scary experience. And there's all these new kids in your class that some of them you've never met before, and you're gradually getting to know bits about them. And there was always one or two who seemed to have this air of confidence about them. They almost had a bit of a swagger because they had a brother or sister in year 11 or 12 or 13. This was Mark Kent, who was in my class, and it was been like half an hour before everyone knew that his older brother Daniel was in year 11. And you had the gobby ones who were like, yeah, well, I've got a brother in year 11, so you mess with me. And then there was others who just seemed to carry a quiet confidence that all would be okay in their school life, because if a problem arrived, somebody would be around who would sort it out. They had this completely different outlook and perspective on school life to me because bottom line is they knew someone would have their back. Actually, while stuff might not go well in school from time to time, it would get sorted. There wouldn't be a problem. Their different perspective and different situation to mine meant they could live completely differently. Now, the illustration isn't perfect because I'm pretty sure God is not going to kick the butt of anyone who crosses our path in school. But there's something about that attitude and that mindset of the person who lives out their life differently because they have a different perspective. When we really see how much God is on our side and has our back, we start to live our lives differently because it gives us a confidence to go out and live for him. Because we know if bad stuff does happen, then God has our back and is on our side and is fighting for us. The Bible says, the Lord is on my side. What can I fear that man will do to me? The Lord is on my side. What can I fear what man will do to me? What a great way to see life. Let's think about the story of David and Goliath. We're going here from starting year 7 back to Sunday school. Everyone remember the little guy David fighting the giant 9-foot-tall Goliath? What was David's outlook on life when he was standing before Goliath? What was his perspective on this situation about to face him? Did he think that he had to make everything happen himself? Did he have to have every question answered before he got into the fight? Was he in a constant state of, oh my life, what's going to happen to me? We don't really know, do we? But I just don't get this picture of David about to fight Goliath with his personal trainer warming up, with his psychologist getting him focused, saying, oh, what happens if he lays me out? What's going to happen to me? What happens if everyone laughs at me? What happens if I lose this fight and I never get a job fighting again? There is this confidence and this trust in God that is staggering. Confidence that I would love to have. It was okay, he was fighting a giant, but God was on his side. David went against Goliath, not because he was feeling particularly giant strong one day, but because he remembered that God was with him and that God would have his back. David took an attitude to life that said, hey, I can live for God because I know whatever happens, God has my back. Win or fail, God has my back. I want knowing God is on my side to make that sort of difference to my life and our lives as we leave Letton Hall this week. Imagine with me for a minute the dream world of what sort of life we could live if we really believed the heart of God was completely and utterly for us. Suddenly the pressure was off us to make our lives go well, and we could just trust God that whatever he had planned would be okay. Imagine how we could use our money. It's okay if we have less money. God will look after me. I'll use my money to live a crazy life of generosity to others, to serve the poor. God will look after me financially. Imagine if we chose our friendships differently. We stopped looking at what we could get from friendships and focused solely on what we could give. If we were the friend to the kid with not many friends, the ones who others weren't that bothered with, God would look after our friendships. Imagine if we spent our time differently. We made crazy choices about how we spent our time because we might live in a way that looks strange to others, but it doesn't matter because God's got our back. What could happen if we lived a completely upside down life and trusted God to have our back regardless? Another guy who was like this was Daniel. Remember him, Daniel, from the Bible? The guy who went in the lion's den, the guys whose friends went in the fiery furnace. He's another guy who lived out his life completely and utterly in the most nuts type of way ever, because he had this complete and utter belief that whatever happened, God was for him. They kidnapped him and took him to Babylon. They wouldn't feed him properly unless he stopped praying to God, which he refused to do so. They threatened him and threw his friends in a fire. They threw him in the lion's den. But he just carries on life in this most completely, quietly confident, ballsy type of, I've got a big brother in year 13 way, because of two things. He knew the character of God, and he knew whatever happened, God would have his back. In the book of Daniel, it says this. It says, the people who know their God shall be strong and do great exploits. The people who know their God should be strong and take action. The people who know that God has their back, know who he is, what he's about, will be strong and take action with their lives. He knew with every shred of confidence that whatever happened, it would be okay, because God would have his back. Let me read you a quote from Daniel that showed how he and his friends had utter faith in God regardless of what they tried to do to him. Do you want to do it for me if it's not really working? Thank you. Daniel's friends are about to be thrown into the fiery furnace, and it says this in Daniel chapter 3. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us. God has my back, and he will deliver us. But the challenge gets even bigger. But even if he does not, we want you to know, we won't serve your gods or the image of gold you've set up. Daniel says, even if God doesn't do it my way, even if he doesn't do it how I want it to be done, I'm going to serve him anyway, because I trust that he's got my back. He's like, whatever you do, I'm not fussed. God's got my back. He knew God. He knew what God's character was like. He knew his character would only ever do the best for him. So he had the strength to live out a completely different life for God. Let's look at another description of God from the Bible. There's something that shows us the character of God. And as you hear these verses, I want you to imagine this is a person who knew God was on his side and lived it out. I don't think there is a better few verses in the Bible that shows us that God is on my side. It says this, it's from Romans chapter 8, it's a selection of verses from the end. It says, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him." In every single thing, God works for the good of those who love him. What should we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? What better 10 words can we take home from Letton Hall this week? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his only son but gave him all for us, how will he not give us all things? I want to come back to that verse in a minute. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? In all things we are more than conquerors. I am convinced that neither death nor life, angels, demons, nothing in the present, no powers, height, depth, nothing in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. If there was ever a group of verses that I wanted to read every morning to always remember that God was on my side, it was these. What confidence we can take from these verses that God is well and truly on our side. Before we leave these verses up on the screen, I want to go back to the one I said before that I want to come back to. It's in verse 32, and it says this, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not, along with him, graciously give us all things?" Now that's a bit of a mouthful, so I want to go through it, I want to break it down. God went through the agony of giving up his own son, which even if we don't have our own children, we can probably imagine how torturous that must have been. But he gave up his own son on the cross for us. And if he can give up his son, the unbelievably hard bit, then how hard would he find it in comparison to give you everything that is good for you? If God can do something as immense as giving up his own son, should we ever doubt that he will or is capable of giving us everything we need? This video that hopefully Matt will put up now explains it a little bit better than I can. Some of the words at the start I don't really understand, so if you don't get those, don't worry, but just get the gist of what it's saying.
He did not spare his own son, but delivered him over for us all. How shall we not also with him freely give us all things? It's an argument from the greater to the lesser, from the hard to the easy, from the insurmountable to the easily surmountable. And it goes like this. If he didn't spare his own son, which is an impossible thing to imagine, that he would hand his son over to butcher. If he could overcome the obstacle, his love for his son, and thus kill it, we're stopping of the goal we have in doing that. Because that's the hardest thing imaginable for God. What could be harder to imagine for God than to give his son up to spitting and beating and a crown of thorns and lashes and nails and spear and mocking and rejection and betrayal and abandonment and lying and the burden of the sins of the world? What could be harder for God than to say, I will give my infinitely worthy son back all? Nothing is harder for God to do. The most reasonable is, if he could get over that obstacle to our salvation, God will stop. He is for you, always, in all circumstances, without any exceptions, if you are in Christ.
because God is on our side, because he gave his son for us, we can go away from here with a newfound confidence, a new perspective that says the good he wants for us, he can give us all things. We've talked a lot about God this week, and just for a few minutes I want us to think about Jesus. He had some pretty amazing things to say about how to live this quiet life of confidence because he's on our side. In fact, there's a section of the Bible which is kind of a guide to how to live like this. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. Can you put your hand up if you've ever heard of a Sermon on the Mount? Can you keep it up if you've ever read all of a Sermon on the Mount? That's fantastic. If you never read it, it's in the book of Matthew. I think it's chapters 5, 6 and 7. It might be chapters 6, 7 and 8. I should have checked that out. Please go away and read the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is standing on a mountain, Sermon on the Mount, and he teaches about a whole range of things. Anger, worry, how to deal with your enemies, prayer, fasting, money. And there's some themes that trace through this whole message of a Sermon on the Mount. And the biggest one is this. God's got your back and he's got it sorted for eternity. If you're willing to trust him enough to make the difficult choices in this life, he'll make sure everything is sorted from eternity's point of view. I want to sum up in less than 1 minute the words of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. It goes like this. Are you poor in spirit? It's okay. Yours is the kingdom. Are you sad over your situation? It's okay. God will comfort you. Are you hungry and you want to see justice? It's okay. God will satisfy your hunger. People giving you abuse for doing the right thing? It's okay. It won't last. Heaven will. People laugh at you? It's okay. God's got a reward for you. Are you angry at someone? Don't strike back. God will handle it. Bad people giving you hassle? Just love them. God will handle it. Turn the other cheek, go the extra mile, give someone the shirt off your back if you've got two of them. You don't have to be seen giving or praying or fasting. You don't need people's approval. God sees, God knows, he'll reward you. You don't have to waste your time judging the hearts and motives of others. God sees through everyone. It's that year 7 coming into school with a year 12 big brother thing. Jesus says, just go for it. Just live a life differently, passionately. Live a life different to most. And don't worry, I've got your back. I want to come to the end by telling you a story about a guy called George who lived quite a while ago. And I hope this story will inspire you not to do what George did, but to live like he did. In some sort of crazy way, as if God being on your side and God fighting for you actually made a real difference to life. George wasn't a very good lad growing up. He was a little bit naughty. He grew up in a place called Germany quite a while ago, and as a child he often stole money from his dad. As a teenager he had to stay in hotels, and often he sneaked out without paying for the room, and he got put in prison for it once. And in the end he ended up going to Bible college, but he didn't really live the life someone at Bible college should. He spent most of his time drinking and gambling, and he took the rip out of Christians there, basically. And once he went to a Bible study, intentionally, purposefully, just to go and abuse the Christians there. And he ended up giving his life to God. And people saw a change in George's life immediately. And George wanted to become a missionary and spend his life telling people about God and serving them. But his dad wasn't having any of it. He wanted him instead to get a high-paying job. And he told George he's not going to give him any money he needed for college. And George knew he had to do what God was calling him to do. So even if his dad wouldn't support him and he didn't have money for college, he trusted God would be on his side and God would have his back. And George went to college without knowing how to pay his fees. And he got on his knees and he prayed to God that he would provide. And to his surprise, an hour after praying, a professor from the college knocked on the door and offered him a paid job, and he knew he could get through college. And George became a pastor of a small church in England, and the church wanted to pay him a good salary, but they wanted to pay it from the money they received that people paid for coming to church. In those days, the rich people paid to sit at the front of church, and the poor people could sit at the back, and they didn't have to give any money. And George thought this was terrible. And he said, I will only continue to be the pastor of your church if I don't accept any wages from you. And I would rather trust that God has my back and look after me. So he didn't allow the church to pay him a salary. Instead, he just trusted God to meet his needs. And George and his family never missed a meal, and they were always able to pay their rent, despite never getting any wages. And George began to sense there was other stuff that God wanted him to do. Each day as George walked the streets, he saw children everywhere who had no mum or dad. They lived on the streets or in terrible government houses where they were treated badly. And George felt God calling him to open up an orphanage and take care of the children. And as we know, George had no money to do this. So he asked God to provide a building, people to oversee it, furniture and food for money and clothing. And he didn't tell a soul what he was doing. And God answered his prayer. The needs of the orphanage were met every day. Sometimes a wealthy money would send him a large amount of money. Other times a child would give him a small amount of money they'd received. Many times food and supplies just came at the last minute. But God always provided. And George never told a single person about his needs. He just prayed and waited on God. More than 10,000 people went to an orphanage that George Muller ran. People gave him the equivalent of today's money of millions of pounds. He never took out a loan or went into debt or ever took a salary or asked anyone for money. Did a guy ever know or live as if God was on his side? One day the children from the orphanage were ready for school, but there was no food for them to eat. The house mother of the orphanage said to George, "We haven't got any food." And George said, "Please take all 300 children down to the dining room, have them sit at the table and thank God for the food and just wait." And George trusted that God would have his back. Within minutes, a baker knocked on the door and said, "Last night I couldn't sleep, George. Somehow I knew that you would need bread this morning. I baked 3 batches for you this morning. I'll bring it in." Within minutes, there was another knock on the door. It was the milkman. His cart had broke down outside the orphanage. The milk would go off by the time the wheel was fixed. And he asked if George could use some free milk. And George smiled as the milkman brought in 10 large cans of milk, enough to feed and drink all of the children. Should we go out and be missionaries and run orphanages like George Muller? Maybe God would call you to do that. But that's not really my point. My point is George had the freedom to live out this type of life for God. A Daniel or David sort of life that made no sense to others, but because he knew God was on his side, because he knew God had his back, because he knew God was for him and not against him, he knew he could do it. It didn't stay in his head as knowledge or in his heart as a fuzzy warm feeling. He lived a life as if it was true. He lived a life as if everything depended on God being on his side. If we leave here today and think, that was nice, we've really missed a point. God being on our side gives us the freedom to live courageous lives for him and make some great choices about what we want to do with our future. And I hope and pray that you make some courageous choices for him. The next thing that we're going to do, we've finished up now. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to get into our Letting groups. And we're going to come and just chat a couple of these things through. And so if Letting group leaders want to spread yourselves out around the room, and if you turn around and have a look out for your Letting leaders and go and sit around them. So in your groups, you might want to discuss, is there something from today where you might think, I want to go out and live my life in a certain way? Is there something in my life that I want to do or live differently? Or something I want to do for God because I know he's on my side and I know if he's got my back, it's going to be okay. And this is your chance to share in your group. What do I want to do when I get home? How do I want to live differently knowing God is on my side? Just share those things with your leaders.
Okay. We've got a few more minutes, and leaders, if you want to be thinking soon about moving into prayer for each other. If you haven't already started to do that, that would be grand. Okay, if you want to be bringing your prayers to a conclusion in the next 30 to 60 seconds, the worship team are going to assume their positions. When we assume, we make a woo! Come on! Woo! Okay, fantastic. What a great God we serve, yes? Come on, he's good. Right. What I'd love us to do just before we finish and go into lunch is it'd be great to pray for Cheds.